Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hello and welcome to yet another Charlton Live lockdown podcast, and this week's show is not to be missed as a very special guest joins us. Assistant boss and now internationally renowned rock star Johnny Jackson joins us this week to talk about his burgeoning music career, the addicts off-field problems, and how he sees the rest of the championship season being decided. Charlton Live team also chat ourselves about the latest updates at the club this week, and once more we have a walk down memory lane to relive a classic addicts encounter. First things first, addicts, assistant manager and former player Johnny Jackson has been wowing supporters once more this week as he has unveiled his hidden talent.
My hair is long, my nails are gritty, my underwear don't smell too pretty, and I could feel the warning signs. Divorce will be on the rise. My heart aches like Billy Ray Cyrus. We're all sick of coronavirus. And I could hear the warning signs. Be sure that you stay inside. So here we go. This virus has left us in a great big hole. Without any football, I could soon be on the go. So what do you say? We're all stuck here at home. We can't work anyway. They want to defer our pay. Defer our pay. They want to defer. We're trying to play, we just want to play. Oh, we just want to play. Oh, we just want to play.
Jacko has taken us all by surprise by revealing his musical ability, and he's used it to great effect to help raise money for charity by releasing a number of lockdown-based hits. So I caught up with him for a chat earlier on today. We were discussing how he's coping during the lockdown, as well, of course, the more important issues of the major uncertainty surrounding the ownership at the Valley. But first, I wanted to know a little bit more about Jacko's hidden talent.
Charlton Live.
Yeah, well, that's right. I've never done anything publicly. I've played the guitar for a number of years, probably since I was a teenager, really, and always enjoyed doing it, but it was always sort of a private thing, just a private hobby of mine, really. But yeah, I was just messing around with different songs and different lyrics, and just for a bit of fun, really. Like, I've had a bit of time on my hands, you see. So, and then I was sending a couple out to. I sent a few to Bo and Steve and the little a little WhatsApp group, and they was all laughing. I sent a few to Joe Francis, who's head of education for the academy, and Joe was telling me, like, begging me, saying, "You got to get one out there. You got to try and you got to get it out there." And I was like, "Oh, I'm not reluctant, really." And he pestered me to put one on the Twitter for the academy Twitter feed. So in the end, I let him do that. And they put one out, and yeah, it sort of went a bit nuts, really. Like, people loved it, and a load of the feedback was good. So that was when I had the idea to sort of try and link it to my charity and try and sort of raise a couple of quid. And it's sort of gone from there, really.
Yeah, because it's worked out quite nicely, I guess, with the marathon being postponed as it is, that you've been able to find a different way to raise money for the charities you chose.
Yeah, obviously, I was disappointed that I didn't get a chance to do it last Sunday and the marathon. And when it got postponed, sort of the fundraising got put on the back burner a little bit, just because I knew the marathon was maybe 5-6 months away then. So I wanted to sort of put it on the back burner and concentrate on some fundraising sort of closer to the thing. But it's actually worked out brilliantly, where it was in and around the time that I would have run the marathon, and it's put a bit of focus back on the charity and sort of helped us to get up right up near what our target was.
Yeah. So how long did it take you to come up with the lyrics? Because the way the songs have been released every couple of days, it feels like you're pumping them out really quickly. But this has been like a work in progress for a while then.
Yeah, I'd say like I've been messing around with different songs for probably about a fortnight. So I had a couple ready to go anyway. But I've got to the point now where I'm running out of ones that I'd already written, so I'm having to try and come up with new stuff. So generally it takes about a day, I would say, to come up with the right song and then play around with some different lyrics until you're happy with them and get them right. It normally all comes together in about a day. Depending. Sometimes you have a little block and you're like, oh, I can't work that, or I can't get something in, or you have to abandon the song because it's just not working, or it's too hard to play or sing and stuff. So it's good. It's giving me something to do, you know. It's giving me a little bit of a distraction.
Yeah, because you've got music in your sort of extended family, aren't you? Sort of like distantly related to someone in the Rifles.
Well, he's my brother-in-law. So yeah, Joel is the lead singer of the Rifles and writes all their songs. He's married to my sister, so
yeah.
And he's really creative, Joel. He actually released his own charity single yesterday.
Yeah.
Trying to raise money for the NHS, which is brilliant. And he's got a recording studio in his shed at the bottom of his garden, so he can knock up some good tunes from home. Yeah. So, and me and Joel was sort of sending ones back and forth as well, and he's been encouraging me to do it as well, because obviously, he's massive, my dad's his living, he is a musician, so I've been trying to sort of compete with him. But we're all into our music in the family.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to hitting the next target, of course, £5,000 to drop the next song. Can you give us any hints as to what's coming up next?
Well, I've got a little Green Day cover, which
which
I'm quite pleased with. I'm quite fond of that one, but I'm just working on another one that's sort of coming together as well. So I'll keep that one up my sleeve. But I've got another one that's, I'd say, 90% written now. So it'll probably be one of those out of those two. And then if we hit another target, I guess I'll keep going.
we have to
start putting them targets up.
Yeah, nice one. Looking forward to it. So obviously, away from like the music, I mean, how else have you been keeping busy in the lockdown? We're all sort of sitting here climbing the walls. I mean, would have been at Leeds today, securing our championship safety as well. So puts it all in perspective. Yeah. But what have you been doing to keep yourself busy?
Well, I haven't been that busy, to be honest. I go out every day for a run, just to keep my running ticking over, and that's good with your state of mind. It helps to clear your head and give you a daily activity. I've been homeschooling with my kids, which is challenging. That's been a different experience for sure. Newfound respect for teachers, definitely. And speaking to Lee pretty much every day, touching base on the goings on. We haven't spoken too much to the players. We don't sort of, I know Bo's already said in a couple of interviews that he didn't want to sort of be on them too much, because there's only so much stuff that we can give them. Like, they've got all their running and Josh Hornby sends all the fitness stuff out, and we touch base with them every now and again, just so they see our face, and if there's any just just to find out if there's any issues or any problems. But beyond that, you know, we're not pestering them. Until, you know, if we're given the nod that we, you know, we're close to coming back to train or something like that, obviously we'll step up our interaction with them and we'll step up the training programs and things like that. But at the moment, it's just a bit of a waiting game.
I guess in terms of keeping in touch with the players as well, and we can't skirt around the fact that clearly there's a lot of uncertainty around the club at the moment. I mean, do a lot of the players come to you guys for some sort of reassurance as to what might happen in the short-term future, at least?
Yeah, I mean, we're trying to keep them in the loop best we can. I think it's important that, you know, that they are given some info about what's going on. Obviously, you know, they're aware of the furloughing of some staff and the deferrals, and they've been involved in them conversations. I haven't been massively involved in them. I've left that down to Steve and the boss have been dealing with a lot of that, and obviously the other people behind the scenes in finance and HR and stuff have all been dealing with that. So I haven't had too much input. Bo keeps me updated, and then obviously we touch base with the players if they've got any questions for us. You know, we let them fire them across, but it's important that they're kept informed, I think. You know, especially when you're asking players, staff to take furloughs and players to take deferrals and things like that. I think, you know, they need to know why and the reasons behind it, and we're all trying to sort of do the right thing to help the club through this sticky period.
Yeah, because I guess most clubs will be finding it difficult at the moment, of course, with the lack of income. But I mean, obviously, with Charlton being in the headlines for, unfortunately, the wrong reasons again recently, it makes it a little bit more concerning. I mean, do you have fears about what could happen next? I mean, it seems a bit unhelpful the way things have been going recently.
I think that's a good word. It is unhelpful. Obviously, I mean, you try and protect your players, especially from these things, and let them concentrate on being fit and playing football. But when it is played out publicly like it has been, that becomes impossible, and I don't think that has helped. That hasn't painted the club in a good light, and I think it's unfair that the club's, you know, that has been dragged through that, really, because, like I said, the people at the club, people who work for the club, the staff, the supporters, they're all good, honest people, and they want the best for the football club. So to see it sort of played out and get messy above us has been frustrating and disappointing, and yeah, well, it is concerning. Obviously, it's concerning. We all want the future of the football club to be sorted out and secure. And at the moment, when, you know, with a power struggle and you know, legalities and stuff like that, it's obviously unstable. And you know, we need that help from above to sort it out. Obviously, we need investment, and we need the club put on a sure footing going forward. So obviously we're hopeful that it will happen, but you know, at the moment we need to see that.
I mean, has it ever made you consider your own future? Because I was thinking earlier, I mean, obviously you've been here now for a long time, so you've been through a couple of spells perhaps where we've had a bit of momentum, like after the promotion under Powley, or after the promotion under yourself and Bowyer last year, and we just haven't been as a club in a position to maybe build on that momentum. And does that frustrate you at this early stage in your coaching career and that stage in your playing career as well?
Yeah, I mean, it's frustrating because you as a player, as a coach, as a manager, if you ask Lee, he'll say the same thing. Like, we want to go as high as we possibly can, and we want to be as successful as we can, and we would love nothing more than that to be with Charlton. But we need, you know, you need help for that to happen. You need investment. You need backing. We would love that opportunity to come at this football club. There's no reason why it can't. It's a great club in London with brilliant stadium. It's crying out for the right investment for me. But obviously, you know, it hasn't turned out that way this time as yet. Hopefully, it will. But yeah, I mean, it's a frustration because, for me, to see Charlton get back to the Premier League would be like a dream come true. At the moment, that seems a long way off, but you know, things can change quickly in football, and if you get the right people in the right positions, we feel that we are the right people to deliver that on the football pitch. We need the right people in all the other places to help us along.
I mean, when do you first think that you realised there was perhaps something not quite as straightforward going on here? Because I mean, I know When the announcement was made in November, there was a few people who tried to tell me a couple of bits and rumblings. Then obviously going through January, I feel stupid now thinking about the amount of times I asked Bo after a game about is he hopefully getting signings in before the end of the season. Now we find out we're in this embargo. And when did you first realise perhaps it wasn't quite as clear-cut as we were hoping?
I think when we found out about the embargo, I think that was obviously a worry, because we was in January and we, you know, all through November, December, you talk about your recruitment and what you need to help you kick on in January. And then when we found out about the embargo and that actually we wasn't going to be able to sign anyone, it was a concern and a worry, because that's not what we'd been told. So when you find out something different to actually what you had been told, you know, it's obviously going to raise certain questions. You had heard the rumbling. I'd heard the same rumblings of what you had heard before that, but you know, you don't know if that's just people sort of scaremongering and jealousy and things like that, because now Charlton are on the right footing, it seemed. So you took all that with a pinch of salt, and always sort of said, well, the proof will be in the pudding, you know. So if they deliver on the things that they spoke about with us, then that's fine, that's great, you know. Obviously they've offered us the contracts that we signed, so you know that all looked particularly positive. You're thinking, why would they offer us deals and things like that? But then when the transfer embargo, you know, we found out about that and realised that we wasn't actually going to be able to sign players, I think that was when you thought, well, maybe it's not quite, you know, how it was sold to us, or not quite being told the full story, if you like.
Yeah, I mean, is there much communication now between the ESI lot to Noon, perhaps? I know, did you go to the mill with him that time he came over? Have you spoken to him much since then either?
I haven't. I mean, he wouldn't have a reason to speak with me. You know, he would talk with Steve and Lee. I'll keep well out of that. Yeah, I met him when he came over and he took us all out for a meal. Seemed like a good, genuine man that night. But again, obviously now we need his help. Lee and Steve had them conversations with him and his people. But yeah, I'm not really privy to that. I'm sort of just concentrate on trying to coach, really. That's all, you know, I'm interested in.
Yeah, and so let's get back to the football then, because obviously, I mean, as a Charlton fan, I wish I could speak about football more often, really. But I mean, what's your view then? I mean, we've heard all sorts of rumours about what's going to happen for the rest of the season. I mean, we should have been at Leeds today. We're in a slightly sticky situation where we dropped into the relegation zone just before it ended, but clearly, I mean, we still had as good a chance as anyone else as staying up. So I mean, if we can't play the last nine games, I mean, what do you think should happen next?
That's a good question. What do I think should happen? Obviously I'm biased, but I can't see a scenario where it's fair that you finish where you are now. And like in that example, we would be relegated. I just can't see how that's fair. We spent 37 match games, 36 match games, not in the bottom three. We drop in for one, and then all of a sudden we're relegated without the opportunity to put it right. We had nine games where we thought we would definitely have enough to pick up enough points to get ourselves out of it. And you look at, we had to play Wigan at home, so they've had the opportunity to play us at home, and we're not getting the opportunity to play them and at home, you know, and obviously they're close to us in the league, so I'm using that as an example of how that would be unfair, in my opinion. So I think, this is just my opinion, but I think the EFL would be quite aware of that. They're probably looking at scenarios where they upset the least amount of people. If they are going to curtail the season, how do they do it in the fairest way where the least people are upset? And I could see a scenario where perhaps there's promotions but not relegations, because I think there'd be a legal minefield if they relegated teams with nine games to go and not given the opportunity to get out of it and then drop down the league. I just can't see how that's fair. But it's a real, I mean, what is the right decision? You know, whatever way you do it, someone's going to be upset. Someone's going to feel hard done by. If you cancel it, you know, Leeds and West Brom, for me, were the two best teams in the league, and were definitely going to go up. So you look at what the windfall for that would have been going to the Premier League, and if they cancel it and say no relegation, no promotion, sorry, get on with it, Leeds and West Brom are going to feel hard done by, as are the teams in the playoffs, you know, and we'll feel okay with it, you know, because we stay in the Championship. So it's such a difficult decision for people, mate. I don't envy them, to be honest.
Yeah.
I guess they've got to try and come up with the fairest way. What is that? And everyone else is going to have their different definitions of what's fair.
I mean, obviously, I mean, we'd much rather stay up by doing our talking on the football pitch.
I think that's important to say. Look, the fairest way is to play out the season. Yeah, of course it is, and we all want to do that. We want to stay up on our own merits. We want to get back, played in games, show people that, you know, that we was good enough to stay in the league, and you know that hasn't changed. We was confident of doing that for sure, but the longer it goes on, the less likely that looks. Especially, I think, you know, Premier League might be different. They might find a way with the resources that they've got and the money and the exposure. But further down, I think it's becoming, the longer we go, it's becoming less and less viable, less and less realistic, really.
Yeah, and well, just finally, obviously, I guess all the talk has been about football, but we still have to remember, obviously, the human cost of what's been going on recently. And obviously, as a club, we were rocked by the passing of Sebo about a month ago now. And obviously, you know, the playing staff and all the supporters knew who he was. And I guess it's going to be really strange when we go back to the Valley eventually, and he won't be there.
Yeah, of course. I mean, that's the thing to remember. All this talk of football and when it's going to restart, and people are still dying, people are losing their lives. We lost one of our own there. It was, you know, a massive part of the Charlton family. Supported us, like, for God knows how many years, you know, and was there, rain or shine, home and away, with his flag and his support never faltered. And we have to remember people like that when we're having these conversations, that it is only a game. And that lives are at risk if it's not done right and it's not done correctly and it's done too soon and with the wrong restrictions in place and stuff like that, then it could cost more. And I think, you know, we owe that to the likes of Seb and the other people that have lost their lives to get that right. If we can get back playing in a safe way, then brilliant. And then we can pay our, you know, our respects and our tributes to Seb when we do get back to the Valley, because I'm sure he would have loved that. But you know, it has to be the right time. I think if you rush it, then you're doing his memory a disservice as well. So, you know, we have to be sure to get that right.
Right, Jacko. Look, cheers for taking the time out to join us on the podcast, and we all look forward to getting back and seeing you guys all as soon as possible.
Thanks, Luke. I'll just say thanks to everyone who's donated as well. Brilliant. I know the Charlton fans have got right behind it. So thank you very much to each and everyone who's donated. And if you want to carry on donating as little contribution as you like, every little helps go towards a great cause. So thank you.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
Cullen trying to take his man on. Chip ball back across, Bowers there, Pierce is there, Bowers the header, and it's Jones!
Yeah!
Oh, it's
it!
Oh, he's got it! Oh, Patrick Barr! You absolute German beauty!
Woo! Dreamland!
Charlton have scored! With seconds remaining!
We've done it, too! Get in! Come on! What a time to be a hero!
Here at Wembley! Oh my word! Oh my word!
Charlton Live.
So once again, thank you to Johnny Jackson for joining us on the phone. If you want to donate to support Children with Cancer UK, head over to the Charlton Live Twitter page where we will share the link to Jacko's fundraising page.
Charlton Live.
Right, also caught up with some of my fellow Charlton Live team members to have our own discussion on some of the issues of the week. Let's have a listen to that now. On the phone, first up, let's bring in Benji. Ben, how you doing? How's it going?
Yeah, good, thank you, Louis.
Yeah.
Yourself?
Yeah, not too bad, thanks. Have you had a decent week?
Yeah, not bad. Bit annoying with the weather. It's been raining this week, so not got as much work as I would like to have done. But other than that, all good, thanks,
excellent
mate.
Excellent stuff. And who else? We've also got Lewis Cat is on the pod this week. How are you doing, Luke?
Yeah, good, mate. How are you?
Yeah, not too bad. How's your week been? Obviously, not a great deal going on in terms of Charlton this week.
No, it's been pretty quiet, isn't it, this week? And on top of that, I got furloughed this week, so I'm going to have a couple of... I've got about 2 months at home, so that's going to be even more fun. So typically the week I got furloughed, it started chucking it down with rain.
Well, you're going to have to start to work out how to make your own fun. Now, a man who's furloughed for the rest of his life, effectively, because he's retired, Terry Smith. How are you doing, Tel?
I've been practicing furlough for a good many years. Yeah,
yeah, good to have you. Yeah, good to have you all on the pod. So, I mean, let's have a little look at what's been going on this week. I'm sort of saying off everything, not too much. I mean, there was the question marks over whether the members of staff were going to get paid. But then, obviously, we saw that they did. We found out they got their pay slips earlier on in the week, and then the money went into their accounts on Thursday. So then there was question marks over, well, does that mean that Tenoon's actually put some money in? Because we were on the understanding that there was not quite enough money to pay people this month. But then we've seen in the answers to the questions from Marie and Mihail yesterday on the club website that Tenoon still hasn't put any money in, Ben. So when you consider at the start of the month, the promise was he'll put some money into the club by the end of it. Well, now April's over and still nothing's gone in. So straight away, alarm bell's ringing.
Yeah, already like a broken promise. We've read that he was saying that this month we're in now, he has to put money in because there won't be any money there for the wages at all. That's what I read from the statement that came out yesterday. So... I don't know if the situation is that he's worried, saying if he puts any money in that he doesn't want to because Southall's still involved, or if it's a case of I don't want to put money in and the ex-directors win their case and then I'm gone kind of thing and the takeover doesn't go through. So there's so many questions about at the moment. It was nice to have a quieter week rather than the TalkSport fiasco we had the week before where it was name-calling. And as the boys said last week, it all just got so boring. Mm. And I know you said it as well, a case of that we can't be bothered for all the name-calling and all that anymore, and he done this and he done that. The crux of the matter is the payment for the staff, so it's good that that has gone through. But then it's another worrying month, and we need to get to a conclusion of these things now. And yeah, I guess it's come down to money not being put into the club where they said they would. So where do we go from here, really?
Yeah. Well, it's interesting, Lewis, isn't it? Ben, of course, mentioned there the one of the excuses for the money not going in is the apparent presence of Matt Southall still. But, I mean, I'm not entirely sure as to why that would make a great deal of difference because he won't have access to this money now. It's not like he can start claiming it's for him and for his consultancy fees anymore. I mean, I don't think that's a viable reason to not put the money into the club. That just seems like an excuse, really.
Yeah, I agree with you. I mean, I don't really understand what the concerns are now because Southall isn't directly involved. I know that he's obviously still got some involvement with East Street Investments, but as you say there, I don't really see how he would be able to access any injection of funds that were put into the club for his own personal gains at the moment, now that he's not involved in the day-to-day running. Ultimately, as Benji said there, the most important thing is that the staff and the players and everyone gets paid properly, because these are such testing times away from football anyway for everybody, with money and salaries and uncertainty around jobs. So to have all this on top of it, you know, when you take the football out of it, you think of what the staff must be going through under such testing times. And ultimately, a lot of those staff are also fans. So you're not only worrying about your own future and your stability in life and the security of your home, but you're also worrying about the future of your football club, because as Benji touched on there, the alarm bells are ringing massively. Because if we have no money, if it's a guarantee that we do not have the money now to pay people at the end of May unless Tanoon injects some funds, which he's been reluctant to do so far, and I personally can't see him doing at the moment anyway, then it's a serious worry for all of those involved with the club.
Yeah, certainly. Terry, I mean, what were your feelings this week when you realised that the money didn't go in from Tanoon Lemire and that promise had been broken?
Yeah, I think Groundhog Day a little bit. You know, we were all hoping for good news, but expecting that then there wasn't going to be. And I suppose if we're all honest, I don't think it came as a huge shock that no money went in because of what's happened up to now. And, you know, and I think we're probably now in the same boat that we were a few weeks ago, whereby, you know, everybody's hoping that he might put some money in the May, but realistically, are we expecting it? I'm not sure. And I think we're at the point now where even the best case scenario isn't great. You know, I mean, you know, the thing is that there are plenty of sensible responses coming from the club about why it hasn't happened. You know, pending court case with the ex-directors, and could Matt Southall get his greedy hands on whatever money he's put in, so it might have to be a loan, but can he do a loan if it's not going to be his club in a few months? You know, so they're all sensible enough reasons if you look at it coldly. But when you put it all against the backdrop of what we've had to put up to now, it's just more nonsense, isn't it, really?
Mm. Yeah, so it certainly raises more questions than provides answers, Ben. Obviously, these weekly questions from the Supporters Trust have been quite useful, actually, in getting in terms of trying to find out roughly how the people involved with ESI are feeling. And obviously, we're getting the answers from Marian Mihail, who claims this week he's passed the EFL fit and proper person procedure. But obviously there's Claudio Florica, and again, as with all these new characters, I've never had anyone actually tell me how to pronounce their names yet, so I'm not entirely sure if that's correct. But I mean, saying that person who has yet to pass the fit and proper person test that the EFL will put him through, the ownership and directors the owners and directors test is its proper name. So I mean, all of a sudden, even if Tanoon is able to bring the club forward, I mean, he's bringing in people. This Claudio, who's had if you search his name, he's had a shady past, I think is one way of putting it. He's bringing in people who are currently struggling to pass the test that a lot of people seem to pass with flying colours. So it doesn't really bode well for, even if Tanoon does somehow pull it out of the bag, which no one is really expecting anymore, the sort of people he's surrounded himself throughout this entire process, from Southall at the start to Florica now, it doesn't bring you a whole deal of confidence, does it?
Yeah, as you say, it's odd for him to have these people around him with a bit of a checkered past. I know with Southall, people have delved into that and seen he's had a bit of a checkered past, so we're worried. But yeah, he's come in and not put any money into the club. And you'd think he'd want trusted people with a decent past to be able to trust at the club. So, look, I'm putting money into the club. I've got you there. I know what's happening. But it seems with Southall that it's suddenly their relationship just suddenly fell apart. And, yeah, no money's been put in because the trust isn't there. And that just seems extremely odd to me. And now these two chaps are in place to try and hold fault at the club for a little while. And as you said, these Supporters Trust questions that we're having are good, because at least we're getting some communication from someone that isn't mudslinging at someone else. But again, their actions need to be proven now, and we've seen that their money hasn't come in. So it's going to be a very important month to sort things out and make sure that we've got a club going forward.
Yeah, I mean, you say no mudslinging, but even then, I mean, we are getting the odd bit, really, aren't we? They're using it to claim that Matt Southall and Lee Amos are still putting invoices into the club. However, and they say in the last few days, Southall and Amos have submitted new invoices. However, they will not be paid, as we couldn't find either a contract or proof of work order. So there is still stuff like that. I mean, one sort of stepping away from the immediate Charlton concern is, I mean, some of the names that have come up in this situation, Lewis, they have come up at other clubs as well, and I don't know if it's interesting that there's a pattern emerging where the likes of people on both sides of this situation, I mean, Matt Southall was sniffing around Bolton, as we well know, with Lawrence Bassini. Obviously, the links to Berry with some of the people who've got paid in invoices, according to some of the leaks. I think even Paul McCarthy, the PA guy, has been linked with some of these other clubs at other times as well. It's bizarre. And the finance guy, Chris McHugh, was at Bolton Wanderers as well. The fact that these same names keep coming up at clubs in trouble seems a bit of a coincidence, doesn't it?
It does, and also rather concerning, because you only have to look at, as you say, the troubled times that have followed for clubs like Bolton and Bury, obviously the sort of the standout example of that. Just what it means for us to sort of have those people in and around the club, and also how they've managed to be, you know, still be involved with an EFL football club after having some of the members go through the problems that they have. You know, the financial woes at Bolton. I mean, they were once a Premier League football club playing in Europe. Look where they are now. You know, they might escape relegation. Might come on to that later. You've got, and Bury obviously are the most standout one, because, you know, they've actually been expelled from the competition as a whole. And you know, that's, if people like that are involved in those football clubs during these times, how are they then allowed to have involvement in other football clubs going forward? I know it's hard to sort of prove where the fault lies, but when you see it happening time after time, and Matt Southall especially, you see his name pop up at Bolton and Bury, and I think he even pops up at Aston Villa when they were in a bit of trouble as well. You've got to be sort of raising your eyebrows and thinking, well, hang on a minute, like, how is he still being allowed to have some kind of influential role at a professional football club if his track record suggests that it hasn't gone very well for previous employers?
Yeah, and it is baffling, isn't it? Terry, something else as well that came out of the questions yesterday, Terry, is the fact that, I mean, there were these weird, you know, again, when the finances were leaked a little while ago, I mean, the names of a Mr. Van Seventer and a Mr. Hurst came up, who, again, had been paid money. And I mean, people tried to link those more to the Tanoon Namir side rather than the Matt Southall side of the whole equation. But, I mean, the questions yesterday, Marion is saying he has no awareness of who these people are. Or he says he's never worked with them. So, I mean, that does raise questions from the Tanoon side as well.
It's just from one bizarre thread to another. I mean, it seems like we've gatecrashed the worst speed dating event on the planet, you know, run by the, sort of the Vulture volunteer organisation. It's just, you can't script it, can you? I mean, if you wanted to do a catalogue of things that have to go wrong to a football club for it to go, you know, really messy, then every single one of these things that's happened to us would be in there, wouldn't it?
Mm.
It's, you know, and that's, I think, beginning to really, you know, cast shadows and doubts over the current people that are involved in the club. I mean, we know 50% of what we had is, or 35%, isn't it, officially, is wrong. But, you know, what's the outcome of the other people that own us, and the other people that supposedly own us, and the, you know, the person that still owns the club, the ground and the training ground? You know, it's just, as I said earlier, you know, the best case scenario is still not great. And even if the extractors manage to revoke the deal and we go back to, I suppose, the Châtelet's ownership, he doesn't want the club, so it does look like he wants to keep his mitts on the ground and the training ground. So are we able to get somebody who's willing to invest, you know, not just buying the football club itself, they've then got to be able to prove to be able to run it, and that's 25, 30 million, whatever it is, over a course of a period. And who's going to want to do that without the benefit of having any property to play on?
So many difficulties that the club are going to have to overcome in the future. Not least as well, I guess, to change the subject slightly, I mean, we try and get back to football, I guess. There's been some sort of rumours going around this week, and we heard Johnny Jackson's views on it earlier on in the show, about how the EFL season might play out now, because it's looking harder and harder that they're actually going to get a chance to play out these games. So one rumour that's going around at the moment is that there will be no relegation, but there will be some form of promotion. I mean, I don't envy, as Jacko said, whoever has to come to make this decision. But, Ben, I guess in a way, if it's impossible to play the rest of the games, which I think is probably possible while we're still going through the situation with the virus, then they may have found almost a compromise that people will accept there. So obviously teams like Charlton, who could still save their skin if they had 9 games left to play, will be let off the hook. It might be a bit of a void to someone like Bolton, who have clearly got no chance of staying up, but will be given a let off there. And the teams who are currently in the promotion situation, looks like they might get a chance to go up. So in a way, I mean, I'm sure teams just outside the automatic promotion places will be slightly disappointed with that, but they've sort of found a possible way out there. What do you think of it, Ben? Do you think that could be considered fair?
Yeah, out of all the options I've heard, I think that's more of a fair one than what's being bandied about. I think Leeds and West Brom, look, this season it seems like they're the runaway teams, and it would be very harsh for them to start again, especially we all know the history behind Leeds always struggling to get promoted, lost in the playoff semi-finals last year. So I think if we were in that position as a club, I'd be gutted to have to go through a whole season again, being how good they've been this season, to try again. And I guess the same with West Brom. So I think it's easier in our league, I think, because there's been 2 runaway teams in them two. But it might be harder, as you say, in other leagues. But, yeah, teams like Bolton, teams like Norwich in the Premier League will be very thankful for that. But I think it just makes sense. Otherwise, we're just going to be playing catch-up all the time. And then you're risking the health of the players, playing so many games in so many days. And I think I read the other day on Twitter that I know they're trying to start football up again in Germany, but then there was a team in the third league out there and 3 of their players gone back to training and then contracted coronavirus. Yeah, I think we've all just got to chill out for a while, and however frustrating that may be, because we've got no football to watch, we've just got to sit it out and try and work out the best case scenario to how people can find it fair, really.
Yeah, and I guess, Lewis, there's a moral question about, you know, the idea of the players coming back and trying to just almost stay in a bubble but play their games, but therefore they'd need to be tested so much that surely, even if it, you know, sure, if you're buying the tests off some sort of private entity, you're still in a way taking those tests away from the front line, because they could have been sold to the government, who clearly have need as many tests as it's possible to get.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, as much as, you know, we as a nation will want football to return, you kind of have to think sensibly about how what the impact would be, especially on the players, you know, because they're going to be, I imagine, if they're going to have to play these games out, they're going to be isolated, because if they go home to families or whatever, they've still got a risk of contracting it from family members. So I imagine they'll have to be isolated with their teams, which, if you think the amount of time it's going to take to play out the rest of the season, that's, you know, it's not ideal to be away from your family for that long. And then also, I think that, as we've touched on it with that last question, really, about how you complete the league, I think that the onus has to be that we probably do have to accept that this season is not going to kick on again. I mean, like you say, the whole time that we're in a lockdown, the players can't go back training. You know, there's not going to be football played in front of supporters for the foreseeable. Do you really just sort of think, look, realistically, can we end this by playing it? Probably not. I like the idea that was suggested there about no relegations, but you've got to maybe reward teams that have excelled at the top and give them a chance to get promoted. So I think we have to look at ending the season on those grounds, and then sort of putting in the preparation now to look at the ways that football can resume correctly and safely for next season. Because, you know, this season now, I just can't see any football resuming until late June, July. Then that has a knock-on effect to next season. You've got the Euros next year as well, next summer, followed by a World Cup the summer after that. I think you have to look at it sensibly and think that other leagues around the world are now slowly starting to cancel the seasons. I think maybe that's what we should look at doing now and just focus on bringing football back properly and safely in August, as we would have done had this not happened.
Yeah, because Terry, I mean, at the start of this, I remember saying, you know, I can't see a way it could be done fairly without the last nine games being played. But as it's become clearer and clearer that we're going to be very shortly in a situation where players' contracts have run out, then it is about trying to find that balance. And, well, as it stands, this is probably the closest we're going to get. I mean, don't get me wrong, you'll still get the teams that are a couple of points outside the playoffs or whatever in different divisions, or a couple of points outside the autos being a bit frustrated, or the teams in the playoffs, if it turns out that they don't get a chance to go into that lottery at the end, they're going to feel robbed a bit, and you're never going to get a situation where everyone's happy, I guess.
No, it's impossible, and I think, you know, sadly, it's the nature of things that you know, a decision like this is likely to pander to the bigger leagues and the bigger clubs. You know, they want the Premier League to finish because Liverpool are so far clear. There's no way, you know, it's their first title for 30 years. There shouldn't be no way that anybody would call them. So they want to hand Liverpool the title, and I get that. But then they have to be seen to be doing that across the divisions, and Leeds is the same. Leeds, you know, need to be back in the Premier League, you know, because of the according to the television people anyway, because of the revenue they bring in and the crowds that they attract, etc. And I get that. And in the Championship, it's not such a bad, you know, it's not such a bad situation because Leeds and West Brom are comfortably clear of the others. But, you know, there's only 4 points between the next three. Is that fair? Who goes up third? You know, because it's a tight one. And League One, by the way, I mean, there's like 1 point separating, you know, outside of Coventry, who are running away with it, there's like 2 points or 3 points separating the next 10. So who decides who goes up second or third? I think the third place, there are three teams on the same number of points. So it's a real tough one. I mean, personally, I see what it also causes its own problems. You know, the real fair thing would actually be to avoid the season, start again.
Yeah, but even then, Leeds and West Brom would have their arguments about that, wouldn't they?
But it punishes less number of sides than the whole false promotion scenario. Because you know, there are teams, especially in the Championship, who think, well, 4 points is nothing over nine games. We get that, and we've beaten the team that's third twice. You know, there's... I can see lots of legal ramifications, whatever they decide to do. I mean, it's a decision nobody wants to make, I think.
Yeah, it's a real tough one. And like we've been saying throughout the show, and I'm glad it's not me who has to make that decision.
Yeah, finally, absolutely, yes. Yeah.
Finally, Ben, obviously away from football, we had Jack Owen at the start of the pod, and he's been entertaining us this week, hasn't he, with his musical talents that I'm surprised I had absolutely no idea he had.
No, it's been quite amazing, hasn't it? I know I'm into quite a lot of the same music that Jacko's in, so I've been quite looking forward to wondering what song he's going to cover next. But yeah, I think the last one was my favourite because I'm a fan of the Royal Family. So if you don't know, it's the theme tune for the Royal Family, that Oasis song, Half the World Away, not the actual Royal Family with the Queen and that. But, but yeah, I'm a fan of that TV show. So when he changed the words for that song, I really like that. Yeah, but he's done some really good songs, isn't he? His singing is definitely up there.
Yeah, it's funny, actually, because by the time that people are listening to this, they'll know more than you about what the next song is, because Jacko does reveal in the interview at the start of the pod, but obviously you haven't had a chance to... I haven't had a chance to send that out to you guys yet, so obviously we need to hit that £5,000... that £5,000 target to get the next song released, Lewis. I mean, do you reckon if you were during your time in furlough, you might be able to display a hidden talent that you didn't know you had, like Jacko has here?
Yeah, it'd take a little while to find one, I think. I don't think I've got a huge amount of plan. Maybe I'll see if Jacko wants to form a band. Maybe if he gets to 10 grand, we can start adding members to it and just get a little group together. I can get on the drums, I'm sure. We get something together. You got Tom Lockyer on piano. It'd be easy. We had this couple of fighting talk, didn't we? We had this about Charlton players in bands, and none of us picked Johnny Jackson. So it shows how much of a surprise that was, really, when it came out. But like Benji, I was surprised. I'm in the part where I feel like there's nothing that Johnny Jackson can't do.
Yeah.
I think, like, so when I saw it come out, when he started playing the guitar, I was thinking, oh, I hope this is good because it's Johnny Jackson. I was very, very impressed. So, and it's all for a great cause. So I would encourage, you know, listeners to keep on donating. The songs will keep coming, and it's all for a great cause.
Yeah, and of course, we should mention today, of course, Terry's 75th birthday of, not yourself, I'm not going to make that joke this week, but of Keith Peacock. And, you know, Charlton legend, we were lucky enough to release part one of the interview between Southers and Keith Peacock on Wednesday. Part two will be coming up next Wednesday. So, I mean, make sure you listen to the first part. I listened to it, you know, not having been alive when Keith was playing, you can still listen to some of the fascinating stories about what football was like back then. And I'm sure, I mean, you would have had a chance to see him play a few times. So,
yeah, once or twice. I mean, he was in the first team that I ever watched back in 67. So, and there's a bit of a bizarre synergy because my grandson came to his first game, which was just pre-season friendly against Villa. And who did he meet up with outside the ground was Keith Peacock. And he was accommodating to my son. He's just a lovely bloke, isn't he? I mean, he is Mr. Charlton. I mean, he's said often and he's bandied around a lot, but he really is. And he epitomises everything that's good about Charlton. Johnny Jackson is fast becoming the same sort of figure, isn't he? I mean, he's making me sick a bit, to be fair. I mean, because he's just multi-talented. He's not giving the rest of us blokes a chance, is he, really? I mean, he's in there doing the video, we're playing the guitar, singing, we're looking cool. I think if the camera panned away, he'd probably be washing the dishes with one leg and hoovering with the other. You know, I mean, he's just a colossus, yeah. Is Johnny, and I think that explains what Keith Peacock is to this club. Just a colossus. And to be fair, we should mention the fans as well, because you know the Upbeats wall couldn't go ahead, and the fans stumped up well in excess of the target they were after. I mean, over doubled it, and then now Johnny Jackson's putting his musical talents on the line, and the fans are responding again, and he's raking the money. So, you know, it's just at a time when the club is going through so much turmoil, it's great that we can still have these things and these people to connect with.
Yeah, certainly. And as I said, second part of Southers' three-part chat with Keith Peacock, we'll be releasing that on our podcast feed on Wednesday coming up, so make sure you listen to that. And like I say, make sure you go back and listen to the first part. It's a really fascinating insight into the life of a man who's well, been with the club for a very, very long time. Right, lads, I think we've come to the end of this little portion of the podcast. Great to chat to you all you guys again this week, and look forward to speaking to you again in the near future.
Cheers, gentlemen.
Cheers, mate. Take care, everyone.
Charlton Live.
Right, into the final part of the podcast now. A walk down memory lane today takes us back to the Valley as Newcastle were the visitors in March 2006.
Chef's cross, cut out by Solano. It's a poor clearance, straight down the throat of Thomas. Now is he fouled? He was. It's a penalty kick for Charlton Athletic. Craig Moore bringing down his man and giving Charlton a chance to take the lead. Darren Bent scored his first ever senior goal against Newcastle United. And he scored his 20th of the season against them to give Charlton the lead.
No doubt, no doubt whatsoever. When he put that ball down, there's only going to be one outcome, and that was going to end up in the back of the net.
And the Obi again, only Solano in the centre at the moment for Newcastle. They go back to Parker, he'll have a go. Oh, Scott Parker! Well, how about that on your return to the club where it all started? Scott Parker with an absolute beauty!
What a strike! Go on, my son, go and celebrate. What a goal that was.
The other goal he scored was a slightly scrappy one, to say the least. It came in the FA Cup against Cheltenham. Oh, there's a scrappy one, an own goal from Newcastle United. Craig Moore is having a horrible afternoon.
They always say when you get the opportunity, you just scored a goal, concentrate, be aware what's happening. Does ever so well here, and it comes off Lee Bowyer. He's got absolutely no chance to get out of the way. Horrible, horrible mix-up there. Straight off his knee. Shea given no chance.
Bowyer for Carr. Away by Hrideson. And now Charlton can break. Dennis Ramadal, who has pace to burn. Bothroyd and Darren Bent are wet in the centre. Ramadal, Bothroyd! Just seconds after coming on, his first touch is to give Charlton a two-goal lead. 3-1 now, they crown the win over Newcastle.
You can see Newcastle are pushing on. They lose the ball here, but look how quickly they break. Holland does well, gives it to Rowdale, says get on, exploit the pace, go at people, run at people. Decent movement here, great ball in. Shea given no chance. First touch, what a goal that is. Game over.
An entertaining 3-1 win over the Geordies towards the end of the 05-06 season had more than its fair share of incidents. Scott Parker's wonder strike on his first return to the Valley following his controversial move to Chelsea 2 years earlier had cancelled out Darren Bent's opener from the spot. But a comical own goal from the now Cheltenham boss Lee Bowyer restored the Addicts' lead before a late Jay Boffroyd header sealed the deal for the home side. The win was just one of two in the final nine league games in that Premier League season as the Addicts suffered their standard end-of-season slump. They would finish 13th that year, having also reached the quarter-finals of the FA Cup, and would be rocked by the news that long-serving boss Alan Kirbishley would be stepping down at the end of the campaign.
Charlton Live.
Right, that's it for this week's pod. Thanks to Johnny Jackson for joining us, and also to you guys for listening. Don't forget, part two of Steve Sutherland's chat with Keith Peacock will be released on our feed on Wednesday, and we'll be back next weekend with another episode of Charlton Live. I've been Louis Mendes. Thanks for joining us, and we shall see you soon.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.